All right, Chairman Brad Holton, I'll bring the meeting to order. Present is Commissioner Van Beek, absent is Commissioner Brooks today. And with that, we have a DSD general business to be conducted during this hour, so take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. Sabrina Minchell, Director, Development Services. With me, I have our Assistant Director, Jay Givens, and then our Principal Planner, Dan Lister, who are also going to be presenting a bit today. So the first thing I actually have is operational, a couple kind of exciting announcements. One is sitting next to Jay is Amber Luter, which I think you've met when she came over. She started with us, checked with her October 16th of last year.
Oh, wow.
As a hearing specialist.
Okay.
Has had amazing positive reviews from our Planning and Zoning Commission. Also working with all of our planners. She keeps all of our noticing in line, all of the meetings going. And the exciting news is based upon her work with us for almost a year and her background in training and communication, we have offered her and she has accepted a promotion pending your signature blue sheets for our associate planner position. So wanted to introduce her and just let her say hello so you'll get to see her. Super excited. As soon as she applied, all the planners were very excited with her level of detail. And I wanted to bring it to our attention because it's actually a great example of what we've all talked about doing is how do we bring folks in with some background, knowing that it may be different than what we're used to, give them exposure to how the county works and training, and then be able to, through succession planning, give them a career path up through our departments. So I thought it was a really good example, as well as she wants to hear what Dan has to say. So just wanted to introduce her and let you guys say hi. And you can say briefly if you have something great to say about how much you love us or something.
I do.
I didn't plan on that part.
No. I have had an amazing time working as a hearing specialist for almost a year, and I've been fascinated with the planning department, and working with them has been an honor, so I'm really excited to learn the in and outs that I haven't had exposure to, and just go forward.
All right.
Congratulations. Yeah, thank you. So I want you to see David Basin give an example. So my second announcement is really fresh too. Matt Espy, who's one of our building inspectors that started with us December 11th of last year, just passed his certified residential inspector exam.
Yay.
So that's really great. We do require that they get certified after a period of time. What we've done historically is we've given them an option. We send them off to, it's called the Construction Exam Center. And they do a week long of just learning how to find things in the book and how to work through that. And he passed his exam while he was there last Friday. So,
all right.
Great example. Yeah, first try, which is not easy. Just a good example of getting our certifications and really qualified individuals that we're bringing in. So, for today, the rest of today, Jay and I sat down yesterday and we were being thoughtful about, okay, how are we getting to the point that we can bring back in front of you a scope for just how we're going to approach the comprehensive plan as well as ordinance updates. And we recognize that we've been talking about a lot of these issues, but still at a pretty high level, right? Trying to kind of understand where you all were. So the next step we felt like was important is we wanted to go a bit deeper and talk about what our current code says and how it's been interpreted over time with administrative land divisions. So both typical administrative land divisions, non-viable land divisions, and at some point maybe relocation building permits. We thought that, and again, just not for any one case, but just walking through what and how does the code work, because it's code that you don't normally see unless you're seeing an appeal, which is always going to be then case specific, right?
Right.
The reason we're bringing that up is a lot of our conversations that we've been having is about what are we trying to achieve at what densities and levels and where, sometimes in smaller divisions, right? And what do some of our neighbors or other counties or cities do where is it truly a small-scale subdivision? Is it we can address it through different comprehensive plan and zoning processes? There's a lot of ways to get to where we're going, but we wanted to walk you through what the code says now so that by the nature of how you're asking the questions, we can get a little more perspective of what are we trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. And then we can come back to you as staff and say, well, here is some recommendations of different ways of doing this. I would assert to even start, and I think you've heard me say this before, I believe that this is the section of the code that is the most troublesome. And it has resulted over time in the challenges with trying to recreate history and figure out if someone is eligible for things. Because one, it's changed over time. And two, it is not a typical process of counties of vets divided. It has a lot of allowances to divide things administratively, not through a public involvement process, as well as not through conference planning or zoning. So when we started with the maps that Jay walked you through, and we started talking about what's the built environment, not all, but a major contributor to those patterns of development have been through how administrative land use and non-viables have done over time. So we wanted to go a bit deeper and explain what the code says, see what questions you have, and then our anticipation is, based upon those, we'll probably on Thursday need to bring you back maybe some very generalized examples of how it would work. So at the end of that time, we can start saying, wow, what do you see as some of those challenges, and what are we looking to achieve so we can look at different ways of doing it? So when we came to that grand conclusion, we kind of looked at each other and we said, wow, I don't know that either of us is the best to explain how this works. So we kind of looked around and we're like, we know someone who knows the code really well. So we said, hey, Dan, come here for a minute. Dan does understand this code. He also understands very well of how this has transpired over time. So we've asked Dan to walk through that with you, as well as to tell you some of the challenges that staff is experiencing. And then remember, the end goal of this is not to say this is how we're going to fix this code now. It's to say, what are we trying to achieve and what parts of it we might need to look at a different option? Because I don't want us to jump back to what we've always done. Let's pause that and figure out our solutions. All right, so any other context that I missed, Jay, and then we'll turn it to Dan.
No, I just had the opportunity yesterday to go back to a previous code in Canyon County and recognize that we've kind of, what we're dealing with has been retreaded multiple times in the past. Non-viables were in an old code, they went away, now they're back, watered down a little bit. It was just interesting to see the progress or lack of progress to really solve them for the underlying issues in the past and just simply taking a different tact. And we want to look at that holistically, so it was interesting to see some of the history.
I think that is where we're going to get to Thursday or the next week, is the reminder that if we want to get somewhere different, we're going to have to think and do things we haven't done. And so we're going to have to step in and be creative. It doesn't mean we recreate things, but we want to make sure we know what we're solving. So we've got to make sure we're keeping that in mind, of we're not repeating that definition of insanity, that we're just doing the same thing and recycling it. Because it didn't work. This, he's talking about the 05 code, right? So if we're just redoing the same thing, we're going to... All right, sir, it's yours.
All right, thank you, commissioners. So this is the same training I would give to any of our staff who are joining us, kind of go over what qualifies for a land division, how we process that, what codes are we looking at, and how we're applying them.
Okay.
After I go through that with you, I'll go through some of the challenges, especially with the non-viable land divisions.
Okay.
So where do we get, how do we get to the land division requirements? It's,
let's see if I can get this to capture this better. The, section 717.03 under our subdivision code. Let's see if this.
So this basically says at the start that if it's an original parcel that was already been divided four parcels, and more than four parcels requires platting. But there's exceptions to the rules, and the exceptions are in E, that land that is divided into no more than four from the original may occur in accordance to Article 18 of this chapter. So that's where we get our land division requirements. It points to our administrative land division requirements. As long as it's an original lot and doesn't create more than four parcels, you can go through this process. If it doesn't qualify for that, then it requires a platting process, and it requires to meet the lot sizes of that zoning district. So agricultural parcels are a 40-acre minimum lot size, so they have to rezone if they don't meet that, if they don't meet that land division requirement. So that goes into our administrative land division section. And the purpose of that is to meet that exception. Here's the ways to divide the property that meets that exception. So basically, 7-18-05 gives us the general requirements to submit for a land division. So the application fees, a site plan, irrigation plan if one is necessary, and then any conditions from, like, say, a development agreement or a conditional use permit that applies to this, you would apply as part of this application. In the application, we're looking for any hillside development, any previous public nuisance or violations. If there is one, we kind of hold off until they abate that, or unless this would abate that violation. We do a notification to the local highway district and fire district, gives them 15 days to comment on this division that they're working on. If we believe all the application is there to make a decision, then we'll do what's called a pre-approval decision. We'll let the applicant know, hey, everything looks good to go to approve it. We just need a recorded record or survey. And then they submit that record or survey for our review, gets recorded, and then we can make the final decision, which is item number 6, that we find it to be compliant with the general requirements of that land division, and then submit a letter, which is, in this case, our approval document that gets recorded for those properties. So that's just a general requirement. And then the next section is really 7-18-07 is just the what was perceived to be the granted by right for agricultural land division. So this is 7-18-07 is the land divisions that you get in the ag zone. So if your property is an original lot, hasn't been divided before, then in the ag zone, what has been determined is if it's less than 80 acres in size, you get one division, which creates two parcels. Less than 120 acres, you get two parcels. And then if it's 120 acres or more, you get three divisions, four parcels. That's the maximum amount you can have in this land division. So with that being said, they can, through that simple process, if they have that size, they can get their split as long as they demonstrate, one, it was an original parcel. Secondly, that what they're creating is 1 acre lot size or greater. So the division and the remainder lot has to be at least 1 acre in size or greater. So the smallest size of land division in this zone can be is 2 acres, because they can both be created into two 1 acre lots. There's an option that was added back in 2022 that says you can create an additional parcel, 5 acres or greater in size, as long as it's only used for agriculture. So no entitlements are included with it. They're allowed to have this just for agriculture purposes only. So let's just pretend they qualify for the three divisions, four parcels. They can have a fifth parcel as long as ag and over 5 acres in size. This goes back to the exceptions. Under the exceptions for subdivisions, they can create as many ag parcels within that exception as long as it's used for agriculture purposes only. But that exception is only good for 40-acre lot sizes. This allows for 5-acre lot sizes. This got changed because it matches our subdivision state law, which allows for 5-acre lot sizes to be used for agriculture purposes, and that doesn't qualify as a split through or a something that qualifies for a platting. It doesn't have to go through that. So that is added there just in case somebody wants to preserve something 5 acres or more as agriculture only. It doesn't count towards the number of splits for entitlements.
Chairman, Dan, can I say that back to you? So you could have a 40-acre parcel with 8 5-acre lots. See, under that, no?
I was going to go through an example real quick.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to zoom it in so it you can actually see it. I may have to get it closer. There we go. Let's try that. So example, let's under that same code, 40-acre lot shown right here. Through that process, they're only allowed one division. So let's say they create a 1-acre lot and a 39-acre lot. Let's just say, so The division will give it this a building permit and this property a building permit. Doesn't say where they can put the house, they can put it anywhere on the property. With that provision of the 5-acre lot size, they could say, well, we want to put this here, whatever size, as long as 1 acre or greater, they want to put it here, and then this here, that's less than 40 but greater than 5 acres, can be retained as ag only. No building permits associated, it's just for ag purposes only. So it creates 1-2 buildable lots still for the code, but keeps this parcel without a building permit, but meeting our agriculture parcel requirements. So it doesn't count as a buildable lot. So again, these land divisions in this section can't go over 4 parcels, buildable parcels. And this code is only based on the size of your agriculture parcel. So using another example, this is 80 acres. So per that code, you can have 2 divisions that create 3 parcels, 1, 2, 3. These would be all buildable lots. Again, using that provision, they could make one more 1-acre lot here and make that ag only through that provision.
So the caveat in there is not the third lot, it's that the other has to, and we had a case just like that recently where there was a dedication of the remaining ground to be exclusively ag.
Right.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
Does that. And the reason why that got added in is we saw a lot of that back in previous decisions where there was a decision to allow an agricultural lot that didn't meet the 40-acre lot size, which is required to meet the exceptions. And so there were some decisions that didn't meet that. We added that in because we saw a lot of the need to have a remainder lot that would stay agricultural. And so we saw that we didn't want the continuation of creating lots that didn't meet our code.
Chairman, good with questions. On that remaining lot, is there a time frame? Like, is it in perpetuity? Is it spelled out?
So let's go to the last subsection here, and where it talks about, I think it's subsection 3 of 718.07, where it says once an administrative land division has been approved in the agriculture zoning district, there shall be no other administrative land divisions from that land, regardless of ownership of any of the land involved except as permitted by this article. Previously approved divisions in the agriculture zoning district may be amended to provide for divisions of the original parcel that were entitled pursuant to Chapter 7, Article 18, but not taken when the first division was approved. So let's go back to the scenario of the 80-acre lot. Let's pretend they only took this division off that 80. Per our code, they had one more. And they want to amend, this allows them to amend that application to get their last one that they didn't take at that time. Our previous code didn't have that. It just said, after you took it, you lost it. You should have took it then. And so this added the caveat that you could come back, amend it, and add that one that you could have had. And even now, if they want to call one of them an ag parcel, they can create that ag parcel to protect that agriculture land. So
can we add something, Mr. Chair and Commissioners? This might relate to your question. When this was changed, which was in July of 22, you can see that while we don't always see truly like an amended, we'll see another application, which practicality is amending the other. This is partly why in the last couple years you've seen us having to work with a property owner, regardless of the history, to chase back what is remaining for them to be able to take, right, and to be able to show those lots, because it allows it to have to come back and do it later. So because of that, if something was done 5 years ago and they did one, well, they still have two, right? So you can see even if a property owner changed hands, now there's another bite at it. That creates that challenge of figuring out what it is versus many other counties, including Ada, it's you get a one-time division and that's it. So right or wrong, this is part of what, when we've been explaining that it's not just about how we do the inquiry process. It's about why are we having to look at applicability. This is one of the reasons of why that we wanted to point out. So I think it was a pretty intuitive question, Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you. And appreciate the feedback. On the remaining 78 that's supposed to be dedicated as ag only, I guess I'm going to get more specific on the question. Can that be amended to at some point in the future? Is that time dependent? What's happening in the area? Like, is it preserved in perpetuity?
And through the chair, after they take that land division, and that's the I'll get into the non-viable where they can possibly get a couple more. At the end, once they take that, there's no more divisions under the agriculture zone. They would have to rezone
there.
And then possibly to get that to be divided up further.
And I think that was my question. They would just have to have a whole new zoning application for that. I have a question that relates to the first part of your presentation, if it's okay, Chairman. When you were talking about the code 71805, I think it was, you indicated something about non-conforming, or they could be called illegal, whatever. But we sometimes see applications to amend, like if it's just a recorded deed that didn't go through the process. I, and maybe it's for a different meeting, or maybe, Chairman, you can jump in, but I find it problematic to try and make something legal that's in rural Canyon County or even in an area of impact where our joint powers agreement is the prevailing document just because somebody didn't follow the process. To me, that's just apologizing without asking permission, and it continues to make it, in my humble opinion, problematic for development across the county. Help me if I'm not understanding that correctly.
And that's actually one of our challenges that I was going to bring up at the end.
Okay.
That we're seeing.
We'll wait. Okay. Thank you.
And maybe when we get there, you can also explain and you can add how we've addressed those and why. And then if we don't, if we need to talk about it more on Thursday, we can. But
okay.
See if we get there to your sufficiency.
Right.
So what we went through, that is the ag zone, that's the simplest line division somebody can take. They can just show an original parcel, as long as they meet the 1 acre lot sizes and meet the minimum requirements. Doesn't require noticing, so we don't notice the property owners. Very little noticing to the highway and fire district. Once we get all that, it's approvable. There's not much we can change. There's not even a look at if it impacts another person's property, if it needs drainage, if it needs, you know, there's nothing in our code that's it. You just get this simple split, that's it. So it's as easy as it gets. But now we're going to get into the two other sections, the non-viable and the relocation. So these are the extra splits. As long as you can prove up that you can meet it, then you can have it. But that's where we'll talk about the proving up.
Can I derail you for just a second? So because of the prime meridian and all of that, we have government lots on some of our sections. Do you want to talk about that now, or you want to bring that back later?
Let's defer, and you want to make a briefing, and we'll see if we answer the question.
Because it's almost its own separate subject.
That's true. We can bring that better.
Let's bring it back later when you're prepped.
We can show some pictures to show through it. I looked at Jay because we've had some recently with his back. Applicant site experience that we've actually pulled up and looked at what it means with government lots and such and how those are handled. It's really less about whether it's original parcel or not. It's about how the acreage is combined. But yeah, let's make a note. We'll do that Thursday.
Well,
we don't get there today on it.
It's also it's also applicable about land lot. So we're going to have to be sure that we all agree about what they are and what rights they have or they don't have. So for the public, it's on the west side and the north side of a section, a 460. It is not, they can exist other places within that, say as if a river runs through, then the government lots are along the frontage of the stream, or I suppose down along the Snake River where we have a solid rock wall cliff, that would be an example of where you would do a weird government lot the division. So,
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I think some of our examples, we've even seen them around some irrigation type facilities sometimes.
Irrigation facilities, yep.
when we bring them back to you, we can show you how it's defined in our code, and even we can take a look and if there's some differentials in other counties of how it's defined so that we know moving forward how it applies.
Sure.
Kind of what you're looking for?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, so our normal land division process for the agriculture zone, here's the two extra codes that if you can prove it up, you can get a couple extra splits. Again, within the boundaries of, you can't exceed four parcels with a land division application. So what is this gonna mean? So using this 40 acre lot size, they took their first division on that 40 acre, which completes the 71807 section. They got that. Now they want a couple more. Again, they can have up to four parcels. So with this lot, through the non-viable or relocation process, they can get probably up to two more buildable lots with this, depending on how they process this and what information they provided. So I'm gonna go through that code so you understand what we're looking at here. So the purpose of the non-viable parcels is to divide the non-viable land within the A zone in whole or in part, where the result of the division limits negative impacts to adjacent agricultural uses. The minimum lot size that can be created is the 1 acre lot size. The application process that is submitted is the same as the land division application process that was explained in 71805, including though, evidence demonstrating the land in whole or in part is non-viable for agricultural use, and evidence demonstrating the result of the request will minimize potential negative impacts to adjacent agricultural uses. So as part of the application, that's the added stuff that they have to provide us. Once that's submitted, we do a notification. The notification is not just to the local highway and fire district, as the previous section stated, but also to neighbors within 600 feet to get any comments from them to provide more evidence for us to look at as part of demonstrating if this is truly non-viable land and if it's gonna be impactful or not. So once we get all that, we get to item five, and that's the evaluation. This is what we have to look at to make the findings if this can be approved or not. So the first thing we have to look at, is it eligible? And so eligible is, going back to this 40 acres, once they've taken all their splits on this 40 acres, let's say, they took their one split, that's all they get, our exceptions still allow a total of four parcels to be created on an original parcel. So it is eligible if they can meet the requirements to add, split it, at least on this 40 acre parcel, twice to make a total of four divisions, one, two, three, four, that could be built. So with that being said, so is it eligible? They have, if they didn't exceed their four, yes. Then we look at the public nuisance or a violation. We have to make sure it's not a, there's no violations on the property.
And so what if there is? What if there's a non-compliant lot?
So if this doesn't abate that, then we can't approve it until they fix that.
Okay.
Yeah. No. So, and then we go into C and D. So C says, the parcel in whole or in part shall consist of land with site constraints and or resource issues such as lack of water, suitable soils, topography, land compatibility, lot size, or configuration that makes productive agriculture use extremely difficult. So we have to look for that evidence. And then, see if I have the right. On this side, yes. D, the division shall not create a negative impact to surrounding agricultural uses. The director may include conditions of approval to mitigate potential negative impacts. So surrounding agricultural uses doesn't mean the next parcel over. That parcel could have agricultural uses on it. How are they not impacting their own agricultural uses by doing this? And then six, it's up to the applicant. The applicant has the burden of proof to provide these this information. And then we're gonna look at if it's deliberate. So if somebody did a land division, purposely put it in a weird location so it can qualify for this, it automatically kicks it out. So So our decision, if the applicant meets the requirements, the director may approve the division fewer than 5 parcels, as stated in our original requirements here. It can exceed 4 parcels from the original parcel. The director may attach conditions of approval which limit the division or use. If approved, a letter is submitted, or approval is set forth, the details and requirements of the division, and then we notify the neighbors that we made this decision. If it's denied or approved, we send out a notification. And then there's the appeal process after. So let's go back to those provisions though. So here's some of the challenges. One, we do not have a definition of what non-viable is. We don't have information of how to gauge if it's a site constraint or a resource issue. But I can tell you the intent. So when we look at this, the parcel in whole or in part shall consist of land with constraints or resource issues. So when this was created, what we look for is either they're demonstrating the whole parcel is is not good for ag, and they're demonstrating that, or just use an example of this 80-acre lot. They can show through history just this section here has never been irrigated, has never been used because of topography or just how their well line is set up, and it's just never been. And they can show that piece, 1 acre or greater, is non-viable. It has constraints there that where they could possibly put it there. So they can show the rest of it's viable and we're protecting that, but this part is not. And so that was the idea of that code, is you're showing it whole and part that it's, there's a constraint there and how you're gonna do it. And that's where D comes from, where how are they making sure it's not a negative impact to any adjacent agricultural use, including their property. So the challenges with that is one, I wrote it down as expectations. So we get a lot of applicants saying, this is by right, we should be able to do this. We should be able to provide the minimum requirements to meet this. But when this was created, it wasn't meant for everybody to get this. It was the ones that could identify it as truly non-viable for their agriculture operations, showing us why, and then showing how and what they're doing to make sure it doesn't impact viable agriculture use. The one thing we do have in our code is a definition of what agriculture is and what viable viable ground is. And so we do have that, but we do not have a non-viable definition. We don't have a lot of checklist of proving up what is a site constraint or a resource. So we have to take those case by case, and we have to go back to of why this is even in our code in the first place. And Commissioner Van Beek was there at the time. I was there too. We both kind of worked back and forth on this code, and there was a lot of interesting stuff that went back and forth. Because this started off really as, let's change the original parcel timeline to something else, something closer, and to give more splits. That luckily backed off. And what came out of it was the agricultural, or the non-viable parcel. And the reason why we went that way, why that came out to be the way it is we were getting a lot of conditional rezones for one lot for a family member to live on the farm. And the conditions that were being placed on it was, all right, no secondary dwelling, so it doesn't, you don't get anything more than what you're already asking for, because you can have a secondary dwelling, but for financing, it's really hard without splitting that off. And then with it, they were saying, you know, 10 to 15 acres would be in ag in perpetuity until rezoned or a conditional, you know, or a comprehensive plan change or whatever, it would stay ag. And they were also putting building envelopes and buffers and stuff. So they were being conditioned to have this rezone when, as we can see, it also created fragmentation, adding residential zones in locations that really shouldn't be there, but our code allows for it. It says if you do a conditional rezone, it's not spot zoning, but it also doesn't set a precedence.
So can we pause for just a sec?
Yeah.
Okay. So the only reason I wanted to pause is I want to be careful that we don't go too much down the conditional rezone side, because that is coming. We have, Development Services, we have sent to legal a draft of the conditional rezone section to have it looked at. So as soon as they get through that and see if there's concerns, we're going to be bringing that to you for discussion. Primarily because, as we've said before, the conditional rezone is an anomaly the way it's written. So being that even if you condition a rezone, it doesn't get you out of a potential for a spot zoning concern. I don't want us, again, to jump to what the solution is, because we can solve for some of this through comprehensive planning and zoning. What I would like to do is one, stop for questions, but two, I would love to hear from what you guys remember and what you hear. If I was to go back to 2022, and I did, and then it went down a rabbit hole, and Carl and Jay told me to stop because I kept sending stuff to them, I looked and said, that whole discussion from 2022 of staff coming to the commission to amend this section, the stack of papers was like this. And it's because it went through five or six different iterations. As we got to the fifth or sixth iteration, you could see that we were kind of creating challenges without thinking through what the ramifications would be. And somewhere in there, we lost what we're even trying to solve for. And I think Dan did a good job of regurgitating like what we thought we were solving for from a staff perspective. That is what we're trying to get through this discussion, if not today, in the future. What is it that we're trying to solve for? I'm a big, like, go back to the why. What in our land use patterns? What is it for a farmer? What is it for a developer? What is it for a neighbor? What are we trying to solve? What I don't want to do is be five versions down the road of, well, now we have something that looks eerily familiar to the 2005 code that may not have even solved for the beginning. Because I'm not sure anybody has really articulated it up front. And I went back and listened to some of those and read minutes, which again, I rabbit holed. Because I was trying to figure out, what were we trying to solve for? Like, was it ever stated what the challenge was? I just don't know. So again, questions, but also, what do you remember? And is that still true?
Yeah. Chairman, having sat through that, and I think Dan were and I were aligned. I mean, that's been a couple of years ago. But I think the question that we were trying to solve for is if someone owns a piece of ground, should they be able to put a home there without that triggering a cascade of, but it's, there's conflict, there's tension that exists because a farmer shouldn't be relegated to a single wide and a dilapidated home, but what constitutes that looking and feeling more like is growth coming in that area? That, in my humble opinion, is what we were trying to solve for. I own a nearly 80-acre parcel that was never divided off. The home is just there. So that represents maybe back to the 1920s how that was done. It became problematic when we, I think when the discussions and the unintended consequences, I remember Dan trying to do a very good job of listing the potential consequences. It blew everybody's mind to have that origination date proposed to be 25 years sooner. That would solve things in one way, but it would create an almost insurmountable level of research and convolution on the other end for development services. Chairman, you might have some things that, you know, in your land use experience. I think, too, that these kinds of discussions and workshops are helpful, not just for the public, but for commissioners who are not land use experts. The variety of things that a commissioner touches, and so I'm going to say it like I think it should be said, a commissioner has to have their butt in the seat and their mind in the ordinance and in state code. I'm in that. A lot of times I get accused of being too much in the minutiae or the details. That's what this job is. I'm sorry. That is what this job is. If we're going to manage something, we have to be engaged in understanding what it is that we're making when the decisions are put in before us. It's a little bit frustrating that we can't go out and look on site. There are ways to do that. I know I'm now kind of doing the same thing. There's a lot to this component. I object at some level to being asked to make decisions on property I haven't looked at and what the impact will be to that. That's again another Idaho State Code bar for this level of decision making on the quasi-judicial level that I don't control. Do I agree with it? Not necessarily, but to go back to the original question, I think we're trying to figure out how to allow a landowner to build for their family and succeeding generations that want to farm. Dan, I would welcome your input if you remember it differently, but that was what I remember. How do we allow that?
And through the chair, so that was one of the, when we were came up with the code, that was, that how can we allow for one more split for this family member, or if there was a non-conforming lot created by deed and not through our process, and it's evident that's never been used for, you know, ag, can we use this process to make it a buildable lot or make it viable again of some sort, you know, to look at that lot. So it was these cases we were getting that were turning into rezones that were, I think there was an idea that maybe there was a way through the land division process to allow for a split or two if they can meet these requirements, if they can show it. It wasn't meant for every farmer to get this. It was if they can prove up they have a piece or a whole parcel that could meet these requirements.
And Chairman, I want to just say, we did have a land use case come before us, and it's relative. If you have a pivot that's on a square lot, you're going to have four unusable or non-farmed pieces because the pivot doesn't irrigate that. So does that render them non-viable? My personal experience says, I have a kid, he tore the whole thing, he plowed it, he reseeded it, all the corners are irrigated. Depends on what you want to do with it. Is it truly non-viable? It's truly not irrigated.
And that's the thing, is going back to our challenges, again, without a understanding what we're looking for these constraints,
mm-hmm.
that's why you're seeing probably some appeals, because
mm-hmm.
what we have been reviewing may not be what they feel. They may feel that's enough constraint when they show that they can't grow crops there. Look at the crop map. But when we see a history that they've never used it for crops, they used it for livestock or for grazing or something like that, why would we compare a crop map to something they've never historically used on that property to demonstrate that it's non-viable? So we get these inconsistent reviews of the history of the lots and being used to demonstrate that they can get all these splits. And what your concern was, too, is we see a lot, majority is somebody split their property illegally and they want to use this process to fix it. So what we've seen quite a lot of, you haven't seen it in a while, but you've seen one appeal at least, where somebody had a 5-acre lot, let's say, they built their primary dwelling. We have a secondary residence code that allows them to build a secondary residence, any size, any location on that property. Once it's finaled, they deed it to somebody else, sell it to family or whatever, and all of a sudden, until we get another building permit, we don't know if it's been split off. They already have an address. They created a parcel, and we won't know until they want to do an addition. And that person will come in and go, I didn't know they did that. Well, I don't want to do a rezone. You have this non-viable thing. Let's use that. And so that goes back to, we do get a lot of that, a lot of either created by deeds or splits that were done incorrectly and they want to fix it through this. And that's the hard part, because we still have to have them prove up how is it non-viable. In this case, looks like it was deliberate, and so does it automatically kick it out? So I just want to briefly go past that real quick and go to relocation. So if they can't meet the non-viable requirements, they can do relocation. Relocation allows them to work with the owner adjacent to them, has to be adjacent, to, if they have building permits available, to move them onto the property. And the idea behind it is preserving this agriculture piece from being developed further and then clustering the residential on this piece of property that might not be as good, or there's already residential there and they're just clustering them together. Again, it can't go over the four parcels that you can create on an original parcel. So going back to my example, let's say there's a big agriculture parcel here that has many splits. They don't want to ever split it. And so this 80 acres here, they got their 1, 2, 3. They just want that fourth one. They can't prove up non-viable, but they can get the building permit here, move it to here. This guy doesn't have a building permit right anymore, but they can move it there, and it doesn't exceed the four they're allowed on that original parcel. So that'll be 1, 2, 3, 4 that they can build on. So that is the that code allows for this extra step. If they can't meet non-viable, they can try for that. They can't get a building permit from somebody, then all their land use provisions are gone. They have to, at that point, then rezone, do a comp plan amendment, things of that matter, to change it to a residential zone. So that is the extent of, in the ag zone, how you can divide zone.
Chairman, the part that seems, I don't know what the word is, but we have so many caveats that are subject to interpretation. So I can think of one, and it was only one that's come before us. It was a square parcel. I think that we approved because the applicant argued on interpretation. There's a home in all four corners of that because they were able to make an argument that they said met code. So no services. It's all, it's that spot zoning issue of why would we do this in, you know, for future development if and when it ever gets there. It's going to be problematic is what I'm saying.
And I think, through the chair, I think Thursday, there's a lot of examples we can show you of land divisions that, what the intent was versus what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Land divisions were non-viable, what the intent was per the code and what really happened. And then relocation hasn't been too tough, honestly. But I think what a lot of expectations from applicants are is they think they get an extra four because of those codes. So they'll say, here's my splits I took. This split gives me an extra four before I have the plat. That is not true. It goes back to the original parcel. What's the original parcel? And you can't exceed four parcels created on that original parcel. But we see a lot of, I think you've seen it, Commissioner Van Beek, a couple where they've argued that point where they get more,
mm-hmm.
they do relocation or... And that's just not the case. The code is not set up for that.
And those relocations are interesting. Who would give a building permit up when building permits are sought after? I don't know. I wouldn't give them up.
That's the thing, through the chair. The original code said it had to be the same owner because that would be easier. Do you have this farmland here? You don't want to build on that? I'll move it to this other one where I already have a house. We changed it in 2022 to say... It's got to be contiguous, but it can be an owner to... Like, you can... make an agreement with that owner of how you want to do that. The problem is what we're seeing with that is who knows what the cost of a building permit is.
Correct.
Transfer that, and is it worth it? So you're not seeing a lot of relocations based off of that because nobody wants to pay the price for that building permit. It's going to most likely be an owner, the same owner, just moving their building permits.
So, Mr. Commissioners, I think that was a fantastic overview. Thank you. We did want to make sure that we are thinking about those unintended consequences because part of what we've heard is the goal, and it actually in both comprehensive plans, talk about, you know, the goal to not fragment agriculture, but to also provide that option. And is it one lot? Is it four lots? It does impact how we move forward with subdivisions and what our expectations are. And then if we go back again, how these things build to the research that Emily had given you a few weeks ago, maybe it's just 2 weeks ago, you do notice that the way the code is written is you could do one-acre parcels. Anywhere else, including an RR designation, when we think about compatibility, is a two-acre parcel. In an ag zone, even with an ag exempt, is a five-acre. So as a ramification, you start seeing kind of one-acre parcels again on all four corners, or you see a couple one-acres. We've seen some examples where we've had people say, why can't I go through a rezone process and split my property into four or eight? My built pattern all around me is you see, you know, these houses on all the corners. How does this happen? They don't understand the difference. And so it is why thinking of how we create that is you can go and say, we understand how we resulted to where we got. We can't go back and fix that part, but how we go moving forward is either going to perpetuate those land use patterns if that's our goal, or it's going to stop those without going through conference plan and rezone, right? It's not that people don't have the right, it's where is that compatibility and where has development started to get to? Two different time frames, really, right? So other questions, other what are we trying to achieve, thoughts? What else you'd like to see us bring back? Is more detail?
Chairman, as always, I think that a discussion of that nature, you almost have to have a farmer in the room. Would I like a compound with my kids on it? Heck yeah, I would. Family-owned businesses, they require structure that's outside of the scope of what this board could do. But a lot of those, and I'm in the middle of a lot of farm ground where the original farmer who was successful deeded portions of their ground to their kids. And when that compatibility honeymoon is over, that ground gets sold to people that may not be farmers. And so it does start fragmenting. I'm not lobbying for one way or the other. I'm saying that it has to be carefully considered on the consequence. That's what we're here to try to do. And there's no easy answer for that. So, yeah, a lot of that's changing. Do I want to live in a nice house like everybody else, even if I farm? Yeah, I do. I don't know what that looks like yet. So,
I think we find ourselves in a transition. I think that in 79, there were thoughts about what we were solving, and we had to have some basis of where to start. LUPA just come into act, and within the 70s, and we had to have something. I don't think that the county over this time period has done well with original lots. I think at any point that an original lot after September 5th or 6th or whatever of 79 should have been given a new, longer number when anything had been done to that original parcel. And for whatever frickin' reason, Plat Room hasn't done that consistently. So we're with that, which creates a lot more problem for you guys. You have to go back to that date. And I just priced out a parcel inquiry, which there's at least four different products that you can hire a title company to research your ground. And most of them started at $500 plus $100 a year to go backwards. Okay, so that's the market rate. So that tells me my $70 is a frickin' joke. And on some of our parcels, it requires that to go clear back to 79. That's a very significant financial investment. So I think that going back to the word transition, I don't have the factual data here to prove my position or my opinion, but my opinion is from 79 till 24, we have a significant portion of our ag ground that is owned by people who will never drive a tractor and don't give a frip about agriculture. And they have been sold, they have bought this ag land for future development. And they will turn it. And so they're going to be doing these land lot divisions, and it's not about their kiddos, it's about money. And they don't care about the viability of their neighbor's farm ground because they have a future to develop every frickin' piece of ground in the Canyon County. So we have a problem because we espouse the preservation of farm ground, but we don't have a mechanism to do that. So we're talking about these land divisions of an original parcel. And I get what Van Beek is saying about the farmer and doing the division and all of that. But the reality is, my guess is, more than half of the land is owned by non-farmers now.
I agree with you, Chairman.
So that concept that Pam White always used to talk about, that ship has sailed. Not completely, but mostly. And so it's a farce to say that the land divisions have gone from a piece of ground and it's ag ground. Buncola, it's ag ground to somebody puts in a subdivision or a change of zoning on that parcel, and then we're off to the races. So to preserve that ground from the original parcel to be farm ground is a farce. It's dividable, 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 if you can get through the application process. So I think part of our public needs to understand that, and I suppose it's public information. I received a email today, and it's out the back deck of this lady's new property, and it's a 20-acre field. That's her immediate view shed, and she's pretty upset because she just found out there's a sign on it for a future public hearing to change the land. And she's mad, I assume. Those are my words, not hers. But you know what? When she bought the ground to build the house, and she built the house, she neglected to buy the 20 acres that's in her immediate view shed. But she wants to control it. She wants for the 20 acres in her view shed, she wants nobody to have the right to build a house like she's sitting in. Somewhere there's a disconnect in our rationale. And I agree that I'd really like to preserve farm ground. I can't agree that I am going to push that on Joe Schmuck or somebody else, that they don't get to do what they want to try to do with their land. But somehow in the preservation of farm ground, somebody's going to have to make some concessions, and they're going to end up selling it for farm ground when they could have sold it for development ground, which has a significant multiplier in profitability of the sale of that piece of ground. So how we do these rules, my suggestion is that I would request from DSD that we do a jaunt and we do a deep dive into the public hearings and meetings up to September 6th, because I've just gone through it last week. The September 6th decision of the board was a finality. It wasn't a discussion. It was after, you can tell, preceding months of discussion to get to that decision. And that decision was a one and done, and they did it. So we have to do some research about what was the goals and what were we doing. And so my suggestion is we go back a little bit in time and find out, because I couldn't find normally when I do an ordinance, I do whereases. I give whereas this was happening, whereas this is a causation, whereas this is what we're trying to solve. And I don't find that. Are we up against a time constraint?
Yeah, you got an audience out here.
Okay, we got an audience. So thank you for the discussion. We'll have to cut it off short, but we got some more work to do.
Commissioners, we'll bring back Thursday. We heard to talk about, Dan touched on it, but when something was divided by deed and how we handle that after the fact.
Yeah.
Also talking about, have Jay talk about farm rights.
Yep.
Right, and how that's handled over in Ada County. And to go back into a bit more history of what was kind of the original intents behind the last change in the admin division.
Yep.
Chairman, can I ask one more really quick?
Really quick.
Yep. On Monday's paper, it highlighted Nampa moving southeast. If you could just answer the question, if that's the plans that we heard in that open meeting, that would be great.
Mr. Chair and Commissioners, yes, that is that area of impact that's been expanded, that they are working on the sub-area plan.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
So let's be adjourned. Thank you.